This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We've talked a lot about how art centers across the state have been impacted by the pandemic. And today we're talking about an art center that started during the pandemic. With us now is Katie Strauss, director for the Huntington Arts and Entrepreneurial Center. Welcome to the program, Katie.
Thank you.
I want to talk about the Huntington Arts and Entrepreneurial Center. It's an arts and an entrepreneurial center. Why combine these two things?
Well, we really want to be supportive of artists and their creative careers, as well as being available to the public to come and experience these creative practices.
And I mentioned at the top that the career started during the pandemic. Is that accurate, or was the center around before that?
That is accurate. We actually moved in March of 2020. So that was around the time that it started really impacting our community. And so, there were still some things that were happening here at the Arts Center as far as building out the spaces to suit what we were doing here. We are all about community engagement, and that kind of halted things for us here at the Arts Center.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, nobody's able to get together. Was that one of the challenges that you faced when you started the center?
Yes, that was definitely a big challenge as far as, you know, having a grandiose grand opening. So it's kind of hard to do when we have to socially distance and it was difficult to really get the word out about what we do here.
Well, what kept you going even when it was difficult to continue pushing forward with the center?
Sure. So we did want to try to engage with the community at some level. So we did have smaller socially distanced activities and events, which was still successful, and we were able to carry out our mission with LaFontaine Arts Council to bring arts education to the schools virtually, and then we were able to do a socially distanced presentation here at the Arts Center. So that was a nice opportunity that we had.
Is this Arts Center the only one of its kind in the city, or are there other ones?
Yes, it is the only one of its kind. I believe this is the only arts gallery here in Huntington. I wouldn't say in Huntington County, but definitely in the county seat, this is the only arts gallery. So,
and so why do you think it's important to have an art center like this in Huntington?
Well, we're more than just a gallery as well. So you can come here and see different works by lots of different kinds of artists. Starting out, we've just brought in a lot of local artists or people from around the region to show their work, but we also have several studios, culinary arts studio, pottery making and ceramic studio, and then we have what we call the workshop studio, where people can come and learn a skill like drawing or painting, sculpture, kind of anything goes in that one. So it really gives the opportunity for the community to come in and learn something new and, you know, make new friends and just engage with their peers. So we are really excited for that.
You mentioned culinary arts. How does that fit into the art theme? I know it's artistic when you're putting stuff together, but generally when we think about art, we think of paper, painting, pottery, drawing, sewing, I don't know.
Sure, that is true. A certain set of skills though, to be able to, you know, make a dish. And so we're really just kind of trying to, you know, expose that to the community that, you know, that cooking is an art as well. And it'll go hand in hand, especially with our arts and cultural programs. We can have a program about, you know, the Arab world and perhaps maybe provide some dishes that are traditionally cooked in the Arab world. So Those things just really go hand in hand. And if you think about ceramics, it's has a very similar things going on in it as a kitchen does. So, I think that would be what I would say about that. why culinary arts is an art.
Well, when it comes to the Art Center, you mentioned there's things that people can see and do. Do you find that most people are coming to learn new skills, or do they also come to view things that are on display?
I think it's a little bit of both. We haven't had a whole lot of workshops yet, as we're still kind of, testing the waters of how we go about our programming. I feel that it's a mixture of both. A lot of people are really just excited about the space, and they see a lot of potential in it. So, and that's really what we're excited about too, is, providing spaces for people to, not only enjoy, but to participate in.
Are there any economic benefits of having this Arts and Entrepreneurial Center in Huntington?
Yes. So as with part of the culinary arts, we have been renting out our culinary kitchen as like a shared commissary kitchen for food trucks. So they are able to use our space as their commercial kitchen. And that's like one of the, first, I would say, obstacles with someone who's trying to start a food business is, finding that space that's certified to be able to cook in by the Board of Health. So that's a really nice thing for economic development. And then we are also getting ready to host a program called OnRamp, which is in partnership with the Indiana Arts Commission. And that is a creative entrepreneur accelerator for artists. And so during that program, we'll be talking a lot about value in the artist and value in work, and then budgeting and lots of other business associated skills associated with the working artists. And so that's a really exciting thing to be able to work with artists and tap into some local resources and regional and state resources as well.
Speaking of sort of the business side of things, do you think there are enough resources focused on business for artists in Indiana, like teaching them about how to run a business or sell their stuff?
I would say that there's not necessarily a lot of focus in Indiana on, arts business per se. I think that is becoming more of a thing, especially with some of the programs that the state is offering. There are a lot of business resources, locally, regionally, though just for general business. So it's really kind of wrapping your mind around, how does my business work with these different models? And there are resources out there. We have our local Chamber of Commerce does some mentoring, as well as, if you're an artist and follow the Indiana Arts Commission, and even our Arts United, which is a regional partner, they often send out emails of different opportunities that people can take part of. So,
well, I think having this Arts and Entrepreneurial Center is really innovative. Are you following any models of this anywhere else, or did you just start something from scratch?
We kind of have a lot of different things going on in one facility. On top of the artist studios and the galleries that we have downstairs, we also have artist space where people can rent a studio upstairs. It's a month-to-month thing. So that's a private artist studio. And then we are in partnership with Huntington University, and they do a entrepreneurial program. So they're sort of renting out business space as well for entrepreneurs and general business. And then they also have their MBA program that they've been giving classes here in our shared conference room during the pandemic, since they had to have smaller classes and things. So it was an opportunity for them to have another classroom area. And then the other thing is our artist in residence apartment and studio. So we can bring in guest artists to do a variety of different programming as well. So it's kind of a lot of different models in one. I did tour with one of my old professors and who lives in Fort Wayne. And this was before we opened. And he said, wow, I wish we had something like this in Fort Wayne. And I was kind of taken aback by that. And I was like, well, you guys have a lot of different things, you know, up there. And he said, yeah, but it's not really like all of those things in one place. And that kind of, opened my mind to, okay, yeah, that is something that really makes us unique because there's so many different kinds of activities and resources that you can find in one place. So,
yeah, it definitely is unique. And I think it's great for folks who want to experience different things. But what are you looking forward to most for the center right now?
Well, I am also involved. Well, I'm employed by Pathfinder Services. So, I mean, one of the things that I'm most looking forward to is the community engagement aspect with, you know, the general community, but also being integrative in our programming and being able to, being integrative within our programming and then also being able to bring in people with disabilities to work side by side with people that, you know, have the same interests in art and crafts. So,
well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us this afternoon. And hopefully we'll check in again and hear about many of the other activities that you have planned in the future.
It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Katie Stress is director for the Huntington Arts and Entrepreneurial Center. After a quick break, we'll be joined by a new guest to talk about a youth gardening program in Indianapolis. If you have any questions or comments for the show, you can always let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Summer is a time for kids to participate in different programs and workshops around the state. And now we're going to learn about one of them, a youth gardening program in Indianapolis. With us now is Phyllis Boyd, Executive Director for Groundwork Indy. Welcome to the program, Phyllis.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about Groundwork Indy and the gardening program. Why do you think it's good for young people to get involved in gardening in the first place?
Well, gardening is where ultimately our food comes from. And I think it's good for youth to understand that connection. I think it's also good for youth to be spending time outdoors, especially now in the age of COVID. We need more and more activities where we can be together and be safe.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about the program that you have going at Groundwork Indy and how that, I guess, relates to young people?
We have actually two youth programs that employ youth in community-based projects. The first one is our program that engages high school youth, and then our second one engages youth that are not enrolled in school, but maybe from 16 to 24 years old.
So tell us about the first program with high school youth.
Well, there's a school year component where we meet with youth after school and then one day on the weekend. And then we have our summer program where youth come 4 days a week from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and we work on a wide range of projects, anywhere from working on the garden here at Groundwork to assisting at other community gardens in the community and doing neighborhood cleanups, participating in projects at parks, things like that.
And then you said for the older adults, older young adults, I guess I should say, there is another program.
Yes, it's also year-round, and youth come 5 days a week. They're building not just skills in working in landscaping and gardening projects, but also we're working with them on life skills and job skills to get them prepared to get better jobs.
So where did the idea come to get this program started with Groundwork Indy for these two different youth components?
Initially, the Groundwork program was started by a group of community members, folks from other nonprofits, folks from the city that formed a steering committee to bring a Groundwork to Indianapolis. Groundwork Indy is a part of a national network. And when your community wants a Groundwork there, they work with the national group to go through a feasibility study. And it was found that, yes, Indy needed a Groundwork, and particularly here in the near Northwest area. And the list of things that we do in the community have come out of the Northwest Quality of Life Plan, having to do with arts and parks and public space, and gardening and food production was a part of that.
How hard is it to find space to do gardening? I mean, do you have a dedicated spot, or do you find areas throughout the city?
We have a dedicated spot here, but we also work with other community groups that have maybe they've taken over a vacant lot and have activated it with a garden. Here in the near Northwest, there are about a third of the properties here are vacant. So there's plenty of space to do gardening.
And so the garden that you have that's dedicated, is it something where you're able to grow, I don't know, fruits and vegetables, or is it flowers?
Our garden here is very diverse. And you can walk through it, and there are flowers next to vegetable plants. And we really practice a way of gardening that takes advantage of the grouping plants together in mixed groups called interplanting, so that they're helping each other. So we have lots of pollinators throughout the garden. And we have plants that help control insects and other things. So it's very mixed up and beautiful.
And what do you do with the stuff that you grow? Does it get sold at a farmer's market, or do the people growing it get to take it home?
The youth get to take it home. Staff members take it home. We also move some of it through our emergency food pantry that we started up last year when COVID hit. It's open to the public, so community members can come right in anytime they want and pick whatever they need.
That's amazing. And so the impact of this garden, have you seen any direct results of what it's been doing for the community?
I see people come in and going through it and collecting produce, at least once a day, people are coming through here.
And so what impact would this garden have on, let's say, the surrounding ecosystem as a whole?
Well, if for pollinators, they travel pretty far. So having a garden here that's chock full of plants that they need is really great, not only for our garden, but for any garden, really, that's within, quarter or half mile.
You mentioned earlier that it's important, especially to get outdoors during this pandemic. Have you noticed any changes in the way you've had to run things due to the pandemic?
For sure. I mean, we have rules where, like, if we're outside, basically, and we're not moving around and we're just in a meeting, we can be maskless. But if we are actually moving around, we might get within 3 feet of each other. As we're working in the garden, we do wear masks. For the most part, though, we have enough spaces where when youth are here during the summer, we just split them into their teams. And we'll send them off to three different sites and be able, we can get a lot of work done and still be safe doing it.
I think a lot of people got into gardening this past year because they had more time, those that were able to work from home and stuff. But did you see that there was an increase in interest in gardening at all?
I heard that anecdotally through friends and acquaintances and other folks. I think, when people get a chance to slow down and really think about how they're going to spend their days and their time, and we have the space for it, we naturally gravitate towards those things that make us feel good. And gardening is definitely something that makes a lot of people feel good.
Yeah, I think it can definitely be therapeutic. I don't have a garden, but when I visit my family members that do have yards, it's definitely something relaxing. Although they say it's a lot of work and you have to dedicate yourself to that. So do you find that having these programs and having people come through really helps to sustain the garden.
Oh, absolutely. We would not have a garden this size that was just, you know, three or four staff members here. We'd have to be working on it the whole time. Having youth, you know, working in the garden day in, day out is really what makes it the wonderful space that it is. And they're actually the ones that have decided year after year to keep expanding it. So it requires definitely a lot of TLC.
And what drives you to be running this kind of a program and to be invested in it? Is there anything that sort of pushed you to go in this direction?
Well, my background is in landscape architecture and planning. I'm also an artist. And so for me, I have always sort of understood the impact that our natural and built environment have on us and our communities. And I also really, you know, understand the impact that having beautiful spaces around us has on us. So I think it's important that youth have the opportunity to work on these spaces and create them themselves. And I also think that having a program like this, it's about the hands-on work for sure, but it's also about the work that happens with regard to youth development and the building of their life skills, the support of them reaching their potential. That is probably the most important part for us.
And what keeps you continuing to push through and do programs like this? I know sometimes it can take a lot out to constantly have to plan and program and all of that. So what is it that motivates you to keep going?
I think one, you know, as a person engaged in this work and community work and nonprofit work, each of us really has to figure out the rhythm of the work that fits with us and the level of engagement that works for our energy. And so that's something that I'm constantly revisiting and adjusting in terms of really what is it that helps me come to work every day and it gets me excited. It's really working with the youth, seeing the impact that doing this work has on them, how much they love it, how much they really enjoy the teamwork and the team building. It's that's where it's at for me.
And what lessons do you hope the kids who are involved in the program will take away with them?
Oh, there's so many. I think the ones that really stick out for me are what the youth learn about themselves in terms of how they engage each other. We do a lot of work around conflict resolution and peace building here. And so some of the youth walk away from the program understanding that, when I have a problem with someone, I don't have to resort to, negative interactions. We can talk things through. And we do a lot of that sort of work here. I think that's very important. And just learning, you know, some of the work that we do on a hot day, it's really kind of grueling, and youth really learn like how tough they are and like what they can work through. So the lessons, you know, it's run a wide range.
Have you heard anything from kids who've been in the program on how it's impacted them?
I have. I've had youth tell us about how much they have learned about just really growing inside and how they've learned more about themselves. Specifically, they have talked about how they've learned to be more mindful of how they relate to other folks. And sometimes, you know, youth have not, this would might be their first job. And so they're learning what it means to have a job, to earn some money. There's just a lot of firsts that happen with a program like this.
Are there any other programs like this around the state, or is this one of the only kind here in Indiana?
There are other programs definitely that engage youth in gardening and growing. Another is the Falege Haiwat program that's run by Esther Bekele and KIB, Keep Indiana's Beautiful, has a youth tree team. We're all, you know, kind of approaching it slightly differently. but we are all definitely engaging youth in the work of growing food or you know, making communities more beautiful.
Earlier, you mentioned something about the quality of life plan. How does that relate to the gardening program?
So quality of life plans have been developed throughout the city for different communities. The one here in the Northwest area, now the near Northwest area, has different sections. And so the part that's relevant to us is the arts and parks and public space actions. And that is led by and facilitated by right now the action team. And so we are in regular contact with that action team. Our members of it attend meetings and attend other community and neighborhood meetings as well, just to make sure that we are on top of what it is that we need to be doing, what community wants us to do. There was a list of action items that came out of the Quality of Life Plan that was our first to-do list. And we started in 2015 working with that list and have accomplished some things and added more things to it.
Well, do you think the like the programs that you have in the gardening, is that one of the solutions to food deserts?
It's an aspect of it for sure. I think being able to grow food for oneself and one's community is definitely a step in the right direction in terms of increasing food security and food access.
What other solutions do you think would be beneficial for communities?
I think part of the issue with, you know, you wouldn't have a food security and food access issue if folks could afford to get to where the food was. So poverty is an issue. Addressing the root causes of poverty and those and the systemic reasons for poverty and systemic racism are definitely where, you know, if you're looking for long-term solutions, where we need to be working.
In what ways do you want to see your program grow, or is it where you want it to be? Do you have any vision for a future bigger garden or anything?
We would love to be engaging more youth all the time. We have in our school year program just started working with Arsenal Technical High School to have an in-school green team there. And, you know, over time, I could see us having green teams at various high schools throughout Indianapolis.
That's really cool. And what's your advice, I guess I should say, for folks who are listening and are thinking, like, how do I either get involved or somehow take part in this?
Oh, they just need to reach out to us. You can go to our website and to the contact us page and send us an email about your interest in volunteering, or if you have a project that you'd like us to assist with, also you can just contact us and let us know about that.
Do you ever have folks who might have like a plot of land donate it to you guys to work on?
We do, not necessarily in a giving us the land to keep, but we have partners here in the near Northwest who have vacant lots that we work with them to activate and help to manage.
And before I let you go, I know you mentioned that the older youth will work on some landscaping projects. Have you seen them go out and do any projects outside of Groundwork Indy?
Yeah, actually a few of them have started up their own mowing businesses on the side, or they're working on landscaping projects and doing their own plant installs and maintenance.
That's really cool that they're able to take those skills and use them. And what you're doing is really amazing. Is there anything you want our audience to know that maybe they don't know about Groundwork Indy?
Wow, I can't really think of anything right now. I think they should come and visit our garden. That's what I think.
Yes, definitely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time. Phyllis Boyd is the Executive Director for Groundwork Indy. After a quick break, we'll be joined by a couple leading a music school in Indianapolis. If you have any questions or comments for the show, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. On our show, we've covered different arts programs across the state. Now we'll learn about a music school in Castleton and find out how it's changed during the COVID-19 pandemic. We're joined now by Rocky Nash and Preston Nash, the founders of Rock Garage in Indianapolis. Welcome to both of you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Hi.
Rocky, what is Rock Garage?
It is a music school where we really are centered around a rock band performance program, where we put bands together, and it doesn't have to be rock. We cover many genres of music, but we put bands together and we go out and we perform all over the region, actually. We played the Vogue, we played the Flyover in Anderson, we did the main stage at, provided all the entertainment for the main stage at Carb Day this year. We're gonna do the Mutt Strut at the end of October, Arts Fest coming up here pretty soon. But we also offer private lessons on guitar, bass, drums, ukulele, mandolin, banjo, voice, like your basic band performance instruments.
That doesn't sound basic to me as someone who can barely play guitar.
Well, we have lessons.
Well, how did this start, Rocky?
Well, we decided that we wanted to have a music school, basically. A long time ago, we were on a road trip, and Preston was a touring musician at that point. And he said, if we had stupid rock star money, what would you want to do? And we agreed that we wanted to open a music school. Now, this was decades ago. And then we were able to implement part of that dream at a local music retailer here. And we're very grateful for that. Then the pandemic hit. And the learning center at the retailer was, like everything else, was shut down. And as you can imagine, slow to reopen, like most educational facilities were. And we had the opportunity to partner with some other couples and open our own school. And now we have Rock Garage.
Preston, what was it like for you to start this endeavor, being hit by the pandemic and then starting your own thing?
It was a little frightening. You know, the one thing about when we were running it out of another retailer was, you know, a little bit of what we consider job security. And then once the pandemic hit and we were furloughed and such, we realized that that was no longer really a reality. So it's scary going out on your own, doing your own business, but even scarier during, you know, a little global pandemic. It kind of makes things more complicated. We had such an outpouring of reaction from folks that were in the program before that wanted to continue, they wanted to play, they wanted some sense of normalcy, that pretty much right out the gate we were doing pretty well in terms of the amount of students that we had. So some of that scariness went away kind of quickly once we realized that it seemed like we were going to be okay.
It also feels like during the pandemic, a lot of folks picked up hobbies or things that they always really wanted to do. Would you say that you noticed a lot more people getting into musical instruments and learning how to play them?
Without a doubt. I mean, if you looked at trends, sales of instruments went up, sales of home recording equipment went up because people had more time on their hands being stuck at home. So a lot of folks did start picking up instruments that they didn't do before, kind of like this was their excuse to scratch something off a bucket list. So we did get some new folks that we didn't have in before. In fact, half of our enrollment now are probably new folks. So it's been fascinating to see on a bunch of different levels, both from a business level and also just a societal level, how this pandemic affected different people. And but luckily for us, there was enough passion for music and doing that you know, people wanted to come out and they wanted to do it. And you know, we made sure right out the gate that, you know, we followed every precaution and every recommendation from the CDC and local guidelines in terms of how to handle, you know, cleaning and face masks and distancing and so on. So we made it as safe as an environment as we could. And that also, I think, made our folks feel comfortable knowing that we were doing everything that we could to keep them safe.
Rocky, what was the most challenging part of transitioning to this new format during the pandemic? Did you have to do a lot of stuff online?
We started doing Rock Garage is just online lessons only, because again, that was when everything was shut down. And there was really nowhere else to do it. And then the outpouring of interest, as you guys were talking about, was just so overwhelming. And luckily just the universe aligned for us, and we gained access to a giant warehouse, just an empty 7,000 square foot space where we could go and have the social distancing, masks and all that business, where we could conduct in-person lessons, even though they're 6 or more feet away. We could have bands perform 6 or more feet away, among the bandmates, and do parking lot shows. Our student base, our membership, they were so dying to play music together again, that a lot of us were going out and doing shows in people's driveways, in cul-de-sacs, entertaining neighborhoods, again, maintaining that safe distance, but being able to play, because you don't have to be right up on top of each other to play. And it was incredible. So when we had access to that warehouse, it started to fill. And our roster filled up. And then once we gained access to our more permanent location here in Castleton, then we had our membership base, and it's just grown from there.
I like that you mentioned the parking lot shows, because I think that's something that was, to me, was really cool to see during the pandemic, these just new innovative ways to do things and entertainment. And I'm going to be kind of sad to see that kind of stuff go.
Oh, it's not going to go. In fact, we have one at the end of August, on August 29th, in our parking lot.
Oh, well, that's awesome to know about. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'll definitely have to try to drive by. When it comes to teaching lessons online versus in person, Preston, what was that like for you? Is there a difference?
As a drum teacher, definitely. I think with, guitar, where you can control the volume, with a volume knob or whatever. But when you're dealing with a drum set, there's really no volume knob on a drum set. So it's kind of hard to hold a lesson very effectively with just doing it online. The connection will lag a little bit. So if you want to play along with the student to demonstrate something, that's kind of impossible. Drums are a full body instrument, so I need to see things like their posture, their feet, really how they're holding the sticks, because all of that is important as well. So for drums, it was very, very challenging. And quite frankly, I didn't enjoy it nearly as much as I enjoy doing in-person lessons. For guitar and bass and voice, it seems a little easier. And we still do offer online lessons, and our guitar teacher and our banjo teacher still conduct them regularly. So there is something to be said for being in a room with someone where you can really kind of see everything that they're doing, because so much of learning a musical instrument is mechanically inclined, in terms of, what their hands are doing, what their, arms are positioned like. And some of that you can't really get the full picture just doing a virtual lesson over your smartphone or even a laptop.
And did you find that you were able to find new ways to accommodate for that, or was it still pretty tough?
Again, with drums, not to get too inside baseball, but, I would do as much as I could, like with a practice pad, which is basically a slab of rubber on a piece of wood where the volume isn't that loud. But again, a lot of times with the, if there was like a lag in the signal or something where it wasn't like real time, it just made it a little bit more difficult. But like anything else, you adapt and you survive and you make the best of the situation. And, for a couple months, that was the only choice that I had. So made the best of it and tried to do the best thing that I could for my students in servicing them the only way that I could.
Rocky, we were talking sort of about challenges, but there were also, I think, positive outcomes for folks where they were able to try new things or pivot in ways with their businesses or careers. What did you find maybe a positive or a silver lining to all of this?
Well, one of the wonderful things about this is while we were still operating primarily online, Preston and various other members of Rock Garage started sharing, like Preston would lay down like a drum track and then somebody else would lay down down guitars, or several people would lay down different kind of treatments of guitars. So like one would make it a rock song and one would make it kind of like a surfy kind of vibe song over the same drum tracks. And then a vocalist would write lyrics and lay down a melody over the top, and then somebody would pick up a bass. And so a lot of different songs, great songs have come out of this, originals. And along with that, we have some new bands, people who had never played together before in person, started writing and performing, I guess, quote unquote, virtually together. And now they go out and they play with us. They play, they do their own gigs. They do all kinds of stuff. So a lot of great music came out of it, and a lot of really cool bands and groups also came out of it as well.
Yeah. I was just home. I was, you know, there's only so much vacuuming and house chores you can do. So I was getting bored and I was like, well, let me do something. I put out these what I called Preston play-alongs, where I record like 60 or 90 seconds of drums and, you know, post them online and invite people to write something to it. And as Rocky said, you know, a bunch of people did. They would take the same drum track and one made it a heavy metal song and the other one made it almost like a country rockabilly thing. And so that's an idea that I'm actually going to relaunch again. You know, when things settle down a little bit here, you know, running a new business. But there were some creative outlets, you know, again, necessity is the mother of invention. So there were some creative things that came out of necessity of trying to express oneself as a musician in a time when that was really the last thing that you could do.
I wonder, too, if it allowed more folks in music and musicians such as yourself to play around with technology and different things that are out there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know just several people, I mean, they're ordering different pedals. They're ordering different things to affect their instruments, their voices completely differently and mess around, maybe dial in their amp or their pedal board in a way that they hadn't been able to program before. So because we all had time on our hands if we weren't working in a
quote unquote essential job.
Yeah, essential job. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. People were messing around with a lot more, and especially writing. I mean, it's cathartic. I mean, they were, you know, getting out their frustration, getting out their emotion about, you know, anything they were reflecting upon, of course. I mean, like I said, several great songs came out of it, and a lot of really cool groups and bands also came out of it as well.
Well, I can tell you're both really passionate about what you do and about the music. What got you started in music, if you don't mind my asking?
I got started, you know, as a kid, basically. And, you know, it started with a snare drum at Christmas when I was like six. That broke in about 3 days, and the bug never left me. And then, you know, as a teenager, not even a teenager, you know, like around 10, 11, I discovered bands like Kiss and Cheap Trick and Van Halen. That just, I was like, as soon as that's why I still have a soft spot for Kiss. It's like, that was the group that made me say, all right, this is all I want to do for the rest of my life. And pretty much since then, that's all I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And so I pursued it, you know, went the route that a lot of people do. You know, you take some lessons, you form a garage band, you play your, you know, shows around your town with people that you know. And I eventually went on to school to, you know, get some degrees in music as well. And to really kind of ensure that even if I did get to the point where, you know, I achieved some goals that I wanted to, you know, the record deal and touring and making albums and such, like I was lucky enough to be able to do, with the thought that, all right, well, that may not last forever. And it didn't. And, you know, I still wanted to make music my life. So that's why I always went to, that's why I went to school to get some, I guess, proper formal training and degrees. So this was really all I ever wanted to do with my life. So it started with a snare drum at Christmas and Kiss for me.
For me, I mean, aside from, I mean, I always had, my grandparents always had music playing in their house. And my dad did too. He played in local bands. And, but aside from like swing choir and school and stuff like that, I went the radio route. Actually, I was in radio and TV for several years. And so that was my musical outlet until Preston, my sister was getting married and she wanted us to write her a song and we were going to record it and Preston was going to have somebody else sing it. And I was like, no, it's my sister. I'm going to grow the spine and sing it myself. And then after that recording, Preston was like, you just want to start a band? And we did. And that was 17 years ago.
Is there anything that we can look forward to for Rock Garage?
Well, we always keep our show calendar full, and you can catch all of our upcoming shows at rockgaragemusic.com. That's our website, rockgaragemusic.com. And if you are interested in private lessons or our band program, that's also the place to contact us. The live shows is always a big part of what our program is about. We just acquired a recording console that used to belong to Kenny Rogers, keyboard player. And so right now we are working on building up our recording studio. So we're going to be open for recording to the public as well soon and offering recording classes. So we're always trying to keep up with just the full roster of musicians and bands that we have. We are still looking for new ways to grow and expand and offer more services to the musicians of Indianapolis and through virtual things beyond. So.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for taking the time today. Rocky Nash and Preston Nash are the founders of Rock Garage in Indianapolis. Our producers are Drew Doblin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Soeb. Thanks for listening. This is All In.